morning, Africa, and welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm Jackson Vunganyi in Washington. Today is Monday, January the 17th, and here are some of the stories we're covering for you this morning. Former Malian President Ibrahim Boubacar Keita, commonly known by his initials IBK, has died at 76. How does his death complicate the relationship between Mali and France?
For France, this was someone who may have not been able to hold his country together as much as they would like, may have not been able to bring in as much democracy as they would like, but they felt that he was someone that they could do business with.
That is Catherine Field in Paris. More with her later on in the show. Authorities in Uganda have given street vendors in the capital Kampala an ultimatum to vacate the streets.
We are going to be there for God and my country. Yeah, man, we cannot leave the street unless they give us some better jobs.
Some street vendors in Kampala. And Cameroon has launched a massive campaign for fans to be tested and vaccinated against COVID-19 so that they can fill stadiums in the ongoing Africa Football Cup of Nations that the country is hosting. We'll have these stories plus sports coming up right here on Daybreak Africa. Stay tuned. And for our top story, the former Malian president Ibrahim Boubacar Keita has died. He was 76 years old, and commonly known by his initials IBK, Mr. Keita was deposed by the military almost 2 years ago after a turbulent seven-year rule. He took power in September 2013 and was re-elected to a second five-year term in 2018. It was during his presidency that Islamist insurgents overran large parts of the country, including the ancient city of Timbuktu. In 2020, tens of thousands of Malians took to the streets of the capital, Bamako, to demand his resignation. His death comes at a time of growing tensions between Mali's ruling junta and ECOWAS, which imposed new sanctions on the country. Mali has also been at loggerheads with France over its decision to deploy the Russian mercenary outfit, the Wagner Group. Catherine Field is a reporter and regional analyst on the Sahel. I reached her in Paris and asked her about the late IBK's relationship with France and how his death complicates the relationship between the two countries.
His relationship with France went back a long way. Of course, his great-grandfather was actually a member of the French colonial soldiers. He died here in World War I. IBK himself studied in France. And he was also seen as someone who France could rely on because he spoke French, because he'd studied in France. And when you think about that legacy of France and Mali, I'm thinking back, say, to 2018, when he was invited to France by French President Emmanuel Macron to unveil a statue in memorial to those soldiers, those colonial soldiers from Africa who died in France. They unveiled that statue there. So that was just in 2018. So for France, this was someone who may have not been able to hold his country together as much as they would like, may have not been able to bring in as much democracy as they would like, but they felt that he was someone that they could do business with.
Now, Catherine, this weekend, thousands of Malians took to the streets to protest French influence in the country. What would you say the legacy of that influence has been, and how does that relationship, that fraught relationship, complicate efforts by ECOWAS, by the Malian society, to call for faster transition to civilian rule?
You know, at the moment, there's really a lot of impatience with the junta in Bamako. There's a feeling that they are really dragging their feet on the possibility of having new elections, and they don't like that. You know, France in particular feels that this particular junta is whipping up a lot of anti-French sentiment as a way of distracting some of the other economic problems within the country. When it comes to the ECOWAS sanctions, that's really worrying for France, even though they do support it, because France and other European countries realize how poor Mali is. It's one of the poorest countries in the world. And they realize that, yes, there might be some big international companies that are affected, but there are also a lot of Malians who work, who live and go backwards and forwards between Mali and neighbouring countries who are now stuck, who cannot get home or cannot get back to where they're living, cannot get their goods to market, that this is really going to affect Mali society, and that these sanctions really are, if you like, they're almost the last gasp as a way of putting more pressure on the regime, which France hopes will work.
One of the other sticking points between in the relationship between Mali and France is this Russian mercenary outfit, the Wagner Group. And now, even though Mali itself denies that they are Wagner mercenaries in the country, there has been supposedly some photographic evidence that indeed Wagner may already be operating, may be deployed in the country. Has the French government officially confirmed this?
They haven't. And just in the last week, we did see some photographs and some video of what are purported to be Wagner mercenaries operating in southern Mali. Now, of course, the French defense minister back in December said that it would be unacceptable for France to stay in Mali if it was confirmed that there were Wagner mercenaries operating in Mali. We've also had various other officials saying that it just would be a step too far. But at the moment, France doesn't feel as though it's the right moment to pull out. They feel that there's still too much to play for. There's too much uncertainty, whether it be with the jihadists, whether it be with ethnic rivalries, or whether it be with the economy. So here in Paris, at least, they are talking about it, but not publicly. And in fact, it's been quite interesting. In the last few days, we've had the Swedish foreign minister absolutely saying 100% yes, that Wagner mercenaries are on the ground in Mali. And that is the reason that the foreign minister gave for Sweden, saying that they're going to pull out their personnel from the European task force operating there. And the foreign minister of Sweden also said they are reviewing the personnel that they have in the region that are there as part of UN operations in the Sahel.
That was Catherine Field. I reached her in Paris. Authorities in Uganda have given street vendors in the capital, Kampala, a five-day ultimatum to vacate the streets. But as Mugume Davis Rwakarinji reports, vendors in the city are still adamant about staying on the streets.
Chuma Moses calls for clients on a busy room street in Kampala. 24-year-old Chuma says he earns up to 100,000 Uganda shillings, or about $30 of profit daily, from his business of selling second-hand clothes. His earnings may end this week if Kampala City Council Authority ultimatum for street vendors to vacate the street is implemented. But Chuma is not fazed.
We are going to be there for God and my country. Yeah, man, we cannot leave the street unless they give us some better jobs. Our fathers, our judges, our ancestors are here. They all have been working here and they're still working here. But I don't know what the government wants us from us. They are trying to push us to the ground. I don't know why.
Single mother of four, Susan Anyaru, vends craft on a busy Johnson Street in Kampala. She says she earns some 30 to 40,000 Uganda shillings, or about $10 of profit daily, which she uses to fend for her family. She says life would be miserable if she's to leave the streets.
This man I'm working here, is, I cannot manage to rent. Now, how can I survive life? Nothing. Our customers know that we used to be here. When I go there, I get something there. We have those who are we supplying them also. If now they're assessing us, now where are we going to start from? And if I, where can they survive? And even if the school, someone who have degree, no job in Uganda. For us, we are surveying with business.
Hudu Sain, Kampala City Council Authority, Resident City Commissioner, says the vendors have to leave the streets and conduct their business in designated marketplaces such as Nakasero, Wandegeya, and Usafi.
Next Monday, we don't expect street vending in the city. I am pleading with you now because on 16th January, we may have a team in Kampala streets to help you leave. It is better for you to leave unassisted. We want to believe that by Sunday, the vendors will have headed to this hall.
Hussein says the move is for the betterment of Kampala City.
I expect all well-meaning people of Kampala to understand that this is for the good, not just for Kampala, but for Uganda as well. Therefore, whether by consent or force, I thank those that have relocated to the markets from the streets. More changes are bound to happen in this city for the good of the city, and no one can stop them so long as it's in the best interest of the city.
There are more than 40,000 street vendors and hawkers in Kampala, according to Kampala Street Vendors Association. And most of these vendors insist they will not vacate the streets.
I am a vendor on Rumu Street, and nobody can chase me on the street because I have no anywhere else to go. I live here. I was born in Kampala. I have no job. We started, but there is no job in Kampala. For us to have to vend on the street, we survive. For us to survive on the street.
But the truth is, we are vendors. We are not criminals. We get things from the shops. We pay taxes, and we have families to look after.
Now we are here, they are assessing us, they are beating us, we have nowhere to go because this is the one who renting for us, we keep with our children. Now where are we going to be?
You are saying, it's like you are saying, go and die. Because when I go from here, nobody, nowhere else, nobody can give me food. This street is my provider. This street is my provider.
There is no other way we can survive here. Here we have to do our business and work. Even in the market, we don't have enough business which can take us there. This bit, little business of ours is just for surviving. That is all. I don't have enough capital. Unless they are going to give me enough capital and they get for me a rent for free, I can go there to the market.
For VOA News, I am Mugume, Davis Rwakarinji in Kampala, Uganda.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. U.S. President Joe Biden has appointed Hamza Warfa, a Somali-American Minnesota state official, as a senior advisor at the State Department. Warfa has been Deputy Commissioner of Employment and Economic Development in Minnesota. He will serve as a senior advisor at the State Department's Civilian Security, Democracy, and Human Rights Department. He's the first Somali-American presidential appointee in U.S. history. He tells VOA Somali editor Harun Maruf that his background and identity as a Muslim, Somali, African, Black immigrant is going to shape his work.
I will be representing the administration in local and international efforts, conversations, and really actions that strengthen democracy. You know, the world needs more advocates for democracy now than ever before. So President Biden really declared 2022 as the year of action to strengthen democracy. So we will be sharing more details on the effort to strengthen, you know, and defend democracy and really push this democratic renewal, democracy renewal, initiative of the president and, you know, like-minded leaders in the world.
On a personal level, as you said, tell us how you came to this country and your background.
Yes, I was born in Somalia, and I was born to parents who were very successful entrepreneurs. And, you know, I was raised under authoritarianism as a child. So learning from my parents' experience in Somalia, I learned that, you know, business success was not enough to guarantee peace for my family. So learning the importance of collective action that, you know, to maintain peace and stability, it requires powerful actions by individuals, by neighborhoods and communities organizing to defend, you know, their peace and stability. So my experience, lived experience, has really shaped who I am and, you know, my professional work. And so this is in direct response to the president's call to action to protect and promote democracy. And I'm really excited that, you know, my work is involved both domestically in the United States, a country that has given me so much, but also globally.
So democracy and human rights issues face serious challenge around the world, in particular Africa, where you are from. How is your background going to help address this issue, and tell us about how you feel about democracy and human rights in Africa?
Yes, I think I will bring different, you know, and more nuanced perspectives as an African, as a black man. And I think, you know, it's the vision of the president and the entire Biden Harris administration to really develop and advance inclusive democracy. And to develop an inclusive democracy, we need inclusive voices and leadership to provide, you know, nuances and perspectives. And so what I hope to bring to the table is, you know, use my personal background as a way of building bridges between the continent of Africa and the country that I am representing, the United States, a country that has given me so much and has now entrusted me to lead and be part of this important work.
That was Hamza Warfa, a Somali-American Minnesota state official who was recently appointed as a senior advisor at the State Department, making history as the first Somali-American presidential appointee in U.S. history. Cameroon has launched a massive campaign for fans to be tested and vaccinated against COVID-19 to fill stadiums in the ongoing Africa Football Cup of Nations the country is hosting. Cameroon and African football officials say that only 2,000 supporters turn out for matches at 20,000 to 60,000 seat stadiums because of COVID-19 restrictions and separatist threats. Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from Yaounde.
This is the deafening noise of vuvuzelas from thousands of football fans outside Yaounde's 42,000-seat Amadou Ahidjo Stadium. The vuvuzela is a long horn blown by fans to support their teams at matches. Among the fans is Sylvie Dinui, a 21-year-old university student. Dinui says COVID-19 restrictions imposed by organizers of the Africa Football Cup of Nations make it impossible for her and her peers to get into the stadium to support African football.
I have been blocked because I have not done my COVID-19 test and I have not been vaccinated. I would have loved to watch the Morocco-Comoros match at the Amadou Ahidjo Stadium. Morocco is my favorite team.
Dinui and football fans outside the stadium say but for COVID-19, thousands of people would have been present in stadiums to support African men's soccer as they did when Cameroon hosted Women's AFCON in 2016. In 2016, the Confederation of African Football congratulated Cameroon for the massive turnout of fans when the Central African State hosted the Women's AFCON. This year, the Confederation said only fans who show proof that they have received COVID-19 vaccines and proof of negative COVID-19 test results, no more than 24 hours old, will be allowed into stadiums. Cameroon says spectator turnout at stadiums since AFCON began on January 9 in Cameroon is very sparse. The government says a maximum of 3,000 fans and supporters turned out in the 20,000-seat stadiums in Limbe and Bafoussam. More than 10,000 supporters turned out at the 32,000-seat stadium in Garoua, a northern commercial town. Fewer than 15,000 watched matches at the 60,000-seat Japoma Stadium in Douala, Cameroon's commercial hub. Cameroonian football officials say strict COVID-19 measures make it impossible for fans to have access to the stadiums. Bafoussam hosts Pool B AFCON matches. Augustin Awa Fonka is governor of Cameroon's West Region, where Bafoussam is located. Awa said on Sunday he launched a campaign for people to get COVID-19 tests and vaccines so they could have access to the stadium.
During the first match, they did not know certain entry conditions. This time around, everybody is sensitized and everybody is mobilized and prepared to watch these great encounters. Tickets are already available at the various sales points. So the population are invited to go there and obtain their tickets.
Awa said as an incentive, the government is providing free transportation to stadiums for people who are vaccinated and show proof of negative COVID-19 test results. Last week, Cameroon reported that only about 3,000 supporters and fans turned out at the 20,000-seat Limbe Stadium during matches. Limbe is hosting football fans, players and match officials for group matches for teams from Gambia, Mali, Mauritania and Tunisia. The military said separatists increased attempts to infiltrate Limbe and disrupt the games. It says separatists frustrated over their inability to disrupt AFCON matches in Limbe have attacked civilians in neighboring towns, including Boya. However, the government says troops will protect all civilians threatened by separatists over attending matches. The government says civilians should turn out en masse for COVID-19 tests and vaccinations so they can watch matches. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
And now it's time for Daybreak Africa Sports, and with that, we go to Cameroon with Samson Omale. Good morning to you, Samson.
Good Monday morning to you too, Jackson. We'll begin the sports with the latest update from the African Cup of Nations holding in Cameroon. Tunisia revived their hopes of reaching the round of 16 after beating Mauritania 4-0 in Limbe Stadium on Sunday. It was Hamza Matoulouthi who put them ahead in the 6th minute before captain Wahib Kaziri grabbed a brace in the 8th and 64th minute, and Sefedine Djazri sealed the emphatic Group F victory with a wonderful effort in the 66th minute. Having lost their opening fixture against Mali by a lone goal and in a controversial manner, Tunisia started the game against the Lions of Chinguetti with urgency, and it was not a surprise when they took the deserved lead with only 6 minutes played. The win left Tunisia third on 3 points from two matches, while the Gambia, who will later take on Mali, at top of the group with 4 points. And talking about the Gambia, two late penalties awarded after intervention by the video assistant referee saw Debuton Gambia hold Mali to a 1-1 draw at the African Cup of Nations in Limbe on Sunday as the team stayed joint top of the Group F standings. Both have 4 points from two matches with the group's other side. In the other game played, Sierra Leone scored a dramatic injury time equalizer to grab a 2-2 draw against Ivory Coast at the African Cup of Nations in Douala. The Elephant had been coasting, but an astonishing mistake from Badra Sangare allowed Alhaji Kamara to tap in. Keeper Sangare fumbled a back header and could only watch helplessly as Kamara secured a second successive draw for the Leone Stars in Group E. It means they have every hope of going through to the last 16. Sierra Leone have 2 points from two games, while the Ivorians top the group with 4 points to their name. Away from the African Cup of Nations, Arles Moroccan influential defender Badr Benoun has confirmed that he won't be available for his team at the anticipated FIFA Club World Cup that will run from the 3rd to the 12th of February in the United Arab Emirates due to his injury. The 28-year-old Benoun was dealt a double blow after testing positive for coronavirus once he was called up to represent Morocco in the current African Cup of Nations before picking a calf injury that excluded him ahead of the tournament start. Recent rumors claim that the Al-Ahly stopper faced a very long time on the sidelines as he suffers a serious injury, but he refuted all these claims. In athletics, Africa 100-meter record holder Ferdinand Omanyala has revealed his program for the 2021-2022 athletic season, which will include the World Indoor Games on March 18th, followed by the Police Championships and National Trials in April. Back in Kenya, he will also leave for the Continental Tour in May, the African Championships in June, World Championships in July, and finish the season at the 2022 Birmingham Commonwealth Games in August. Omanyala says he's ready to break his current record this season. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson Omale in Garowa, Yaoundé. It's back to you, Jackson, in Washington.
And that's it for this edition of Daybreak Africa. Until next time, I'm Jackson Vunganyi.